Ladies and gentlemen, Chris Phillips is in my house.
You're listening to the Mark Hatfield Podcast.
You want to go fight some crime?
You know, I know your name, and I know you play the game.
Here I am.
Unbelievable. Thanks for doing this, man.
No problem.
This is great.
It was easy organizing this, wasn't it?
Yeah, come on over. All I have to do is mop the floor. My wife says you can have your friends over to play.
There you go.
That's great. And normally we have coffee and water, but with the big rig here, we just have big rig beer to drink.
Perfect.
Yeah. So, you know, we'll open these, and when we're done, the conversation will be over.
Yeah.
Sound good?
Sound great.
Yeah. All right. What's your favorite kind?
Of those ones?
Gold?
Probably the gold, but...
Yeah, well, here we go. Let's
you know what? That's what's great about the craft beer is... There's a little bit for every occasion. There is no one favorite. It's you know, goes with the seasons and the mood and how you're feeling, and it's great.
I'm feeling like it's just after breakfast time, and I should have a beer with Chris Phillips.
This is a great breakfast
beer. Yeah, this is the best of all.
Cheers.
Yeah, here we go, man. Cheers.
Right on.
And these silver mugs, for some reason, every occasion in my family, my mother buys us all mugs. And, like, you can look, there's, like, a cupboard full of them. This one here says, happy 10th birthday, Keegan. So that's my son, one of my sons. And yours always says something.
Nothing like getting a stein for your 10th birthday. That's great.
Can you imagine later on in life they're at a party drinking out of their birthday present from their 10 from grandma?
I got the fitting Canada 150 glass.
Oh, yeah, and on this side it says, Jaden, happy 16th birthday.
Oh, so yeah,
that's
there
a,
you
oh,
go.
That's, yeah, 150. That's from this year. Wow, it's delicious.
That hits the spot.
Yeah. It's a wheat beer, obviously. I can see that by the wheat pitchers.
No, this is just an ale. It's just the wheat pitcher for the grains that we make it with. We make a Hefeweizen that is a true wheat beer, but this is a lagered ale.
So you know a lot about beer now.
I wish I knew more.
Yeah.
But,
did you always know a lot about beer? Or?
I've known more about the taste than what went into making it.
Yeah,
you know, coming up in the hockey culture, that was went kind of hand in hand growing up a little bit. But since getting into this business, I've learned a lot, and mm-hmm. and I feel like the more I learn, the more I realize I don't know. There's just so much to learn.
It is an art, right? It's a total art.
100%. You know, try and be around the brewery a little bit and just watching, just you know, see everything that that they have that goes into it. Detailed charts, checking every beer every day.
Wow, like a science, more of a science and an art, right?
100%. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow, that's crazy. Did you know? So you're from Alberta, right?
Yes, Fort McMurray, Alberta.
Oh, Fort McMurray.
Yeah.
That's where the fires were last.
Correct.
Wow.
Yeah.
What was that like?
Well, I'm glad I wasn't there.
Yeah.
At the time, seeing the videos of it, you know, as it was going on and afterwards were surreal. Mm-hmm. My sister still lives there and was, you know, talking to them on the phone as they were, you know, trying to drive out of town. And, you know, they were even a part of it and it was hard for them to describe.
Yeah. So, could you see in the images like places you recognize going up in flames?
In the aftermath, yeah,
yeah.
A lot of the videos at the time were really the, you know, the forests on the side of the highways and just the people trying to get out of town and you know, really just incredible that you know, everyone left in kind of an orderly manner.
Yeah.
You know, kind of. You know, depending on where you lived, you're on one highway out of town, or you know, in each direction, and that was your only option. And you know, really no injuries involved with that. There was a crash later on that I don't think was directly related to that, although they were being evacuated. But you know, just incredible to see that happen.
Yeah, unbelievable. A lot of it's been rebuilt, I think. Do you know anything about what's going on there now?
Excuse me. They're getting there, but it's slow.
Yeah.
You know, the areas that got hit hard, you know, you think, well, the foundation survived, you know, it's concrete, you just build on top of it. Yeah. But when you have a mass fire like that, everything is contaminated, so they got to go in and basically rip everything out of there. So it's taken some time, but they're slowly getting there.
And it's an oil town, right? Like people come from the oil fields from there?
Yes.
Is that what your dad did? Your
parents? He worked in the oil sands, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom was a nurse. That's how they both ended up there in the early 70s. And then, myself and my sister are both Tarzan babies.
Tarzan babies. There's a movie like that. Yeah. What year were you born? In the 70s?
78, yeah.
78. So when you start playing hockey, yeah.
I think I had skates on when I was 3 years old. Dad made outdoor rink in the back, and there's lots of outdoor rinks in town across the street. Started organized hockey when I was five,
How was it at the beginning? I'm sure you've heard your parents talk about the stories. Like, you're a big guy. Were you a good skater at the start, or? I know you said you were three, so. I was doing sow cows.
I played almost 20 years in NHL, but I still don't know if anyone would say I was a good skater, so I don't know if that ever happened, and nor will it ever, but, skated good enough to, to make it.
But you were good at the start. Like I said, for football, for me, like, I was just a tall, skinny kid playing football for years that nobody ever looked at, and it was years of pointing myself in a certain direction that got me to where I wanted to get to. Is it something like people are like, wow? Because I mean, my kids play hockey. Well, my oldest son plays hockey, and you see the kids at five who can already, skate backwards and do tight turns and all these things to make them a little bit better. Is that when did you start seeing things in your game that made it seem like you might play hockey for a while?
Honestly, I never really thought that I would have a chance at making a career out of it till I was about 15. I was, I guess, a good player, but in my eyes, on every team I played with, I always felt like there was guys that were, as good or better than I was. A good growth spurt when I was 15 and helped out and ended up making the local junior A team when I was 15. And that's when things really took off for me.
That's amazing. It's amazing because a lot of I see hockey parents, and normally it's if it's your first child, you're standing by the boards and you see this kid out there and you want them to be the best on the ice. And to hear you say, I wasn't, I didn't think I was the best on any team I was, right? Like, that's an amazing thing to. It goes to show that as long as you're out there showing up every day, having a good time with it, then great things will happen if you just keep going, right?
100%. You just never know. Yeah. There's always those kids that everybody's like, oh, do you see, that kid? Oh, wow, that kid's a star. And, when they're 10, 11, 12 years old. And, certainly not to take anything away from those players. But I'm always quick to say, those – if there's a roster sheet with everybody on there, hang on to it, you think it's going to be that kid that's going to make it, but just make sure you have everyone's name, because I won't be shocked to see it's the other kids that, for whatever reason, again, there's just so many factors that go into it. I don't think you can truly just manufacture a hockey player. And some just totally out of your control, and size is often one of them. And some kids sprout early, and then they're wow, look how big that kid, and then all of a sudden other guys are going past them, and you just never know. So you're right in saying that you just never know. If you just stick with it, keep having fun, keep being the best that you can be and enjoy doing it, that you just never know.
Yeah. When you were a kid, did you play just hockey or was it other sports?
Baseball as well.
So in the summertime, skates but put away and...
For the most part, I played in a few summer tournaments, but baseball was a big focus for me as well. And, in the middle of the baseball season, that was my dream to, play in the major leagues.
Oh, yeah?
I enjoyed it as much as I did hockey.
Yeah. And how far did you get in baseball?
I played till I was about 15, and sort of got to that age where hockey kind of took over and had to choose and take one a little more seriously. And I think just the environment of being up in northern Alberta, that a little bit tougher to do more baseball than just the summer,
mm-hmm.
That, you know, maybe hindered that decision.
Yeah.
You know, I had a great career and wouldn't change a thing. But, you know, looking back, I wish I would have tried to stick it out and play ball for a few more years just to see what maybe could have happened.
Yeah. Yeah. Because 20 years in the NHL is not enough.
Yeah.
It's funny because people would say, oh, you know, you got a longer career in baseball, right?
But yeah.
I mean, was it 19 years and 19 and a half? Or?
Yeah.
We'll go with 20. 20 is, that's a long
Sounds
time.
Sounds good.
Yeah. It's easy to say. That's like saying I played a year for the Miami Dolphins. Let's just leave it at that. Yeah. And sister, you said?
Yes, older sister.
Older sister, and she a hockey player?
No.
No? What'd she do?
She's a stay-at-home mom. Her husband works in the oil sands. And
She still lives in... Oh, that's right.
Yeah, still up in Fort Mac. She's three kids who are... very busy in their own sports, and that's almost a full-time job.
Three kids
driving them to all their stuff.
You and I know that.
Yeah, we know what it's all about.
I woke up this morning, Monday morning, exhausted, and I went, why am I so tired? And I'm like, you know, this weekend it was nonstop between Christmas parties for the kids, for the adults, Taekwondo belt testing, concerts, hockey. Like, it just keeps going and going.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, no, we had the same schedule, but Aaron was on duty in town with two of them. I was at a hockey tournament down in Toronto. So
you're probably more busy now than when you played hockey in the NHL.
100%.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, it is. helping coach two older ones' hockey teams as well with Big Rig and working for the Senators. It's we have lots on the go.
So your kids are how old?
14, 13, and 10.
14, 13, 10, 14, and 13 play hockey?
All three of them are playing hockey now. Yeah, so oldest boy, two girls, all in hockey.
All in hockey.
And then we have the youngest one figure skates, the middle one's volleyball, and then my son's playing baseball. So it's...
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And then the Big Rig, how much are you at the brewery? There's two spots, right?
We have two restaurants and the brewery.
Where's the brewery?
And the brewery's in Kanata. And then we have Irish Street Restaurant, and
this is delicious.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, I'm gonna finish that right now. So the brewery's is it also a place you can go and have food? And
it's got a tasting room, but it's not a full restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
You can get sandwiches, pizza, pretzels, stuff like that to help wash down the food.
Yeah, first time I met you, I was just thinking about that story. Is like 2 years ago at the Just For Me? No, not. Proud to be me.
Proud to be me.
Yeah, Proud to Be Bully Free Gala. Yeah. And, you know, you get there and there's a reception. I was the guest speaker, the keynote speaker, and there's people everywhere. You know, there's some Sens players and some politicians. And the guy was doing shots at the bar with Jody Minnick. And, and then it starts and I go out and I start. And it was an emotional time. It was right when Stuntman Stewart announced he had cancer and he was supposed to host. So there's a lot of emotions in the air. And so I get up there and... You know, I'm getting great reaction from the crowd.
Well, you did a great job, by the way. I remember that one.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate you saying that. And so I'm up there, and I knew there was some people in the crowd, like Chad Shella, who I think, you know, works for the Sens that you knew, and just some other people. And I was making jokes with their names involved, and I hear this, this big laugh. And I had the lights in my face. I couldn't see who it was. I just, this giant image over here laughing at everything I was saying. And then, it went really well. And I get off stage and I look over and it's Chris Phillips. And then you came over and said hi to me and stuff, too. So that was a big moment. Yeah, I appreciate you doing that.
Well, it was great. And, anytime you can poke fun at Chad Shella and he didn't have a chance to reply.
That's right.
It's even better.
Yeah, that's funny. I think Chris Neal was there, too. And he came over, too. So that was a really cool moment for me, for sure, to have other sort of athletes to react to my story. Because it's sort of what's driven me my whole life. And I'm sure you know it. Maybe people who are listening don't. I'll just give a quick little elevator version. In 85, my brother and I were watching the Super Bowl, Dan Marino, the Miami Dolphins, the whole bit. And, I was 15, my brother was 19. And he says to me, if Dan Marino can make it to the NFL at such a young, early age mark, surely someday you could play in the NFL. So that's, as two brothers, that's what we started to do out in Blackburn Hamlet, go down to the local sports field. We just kept trying and kept going that whole season. And the next season, last game of the year, We lose the game. I go into the change room, and the date was October 30th, 1985. And after the game, unfortunately, my uncle was there, and he said, "Mark, I'm sorry, but your brother Bill died today." And obviously the worst possible thing that could have happened to me, and had this horrible moment. And instead of giving up on that dream that we'd set together, I made it sort of the focus of my life, and I made a promise to him that, you know, I would never stop trying to do that until I did it, until there was nowhere left to keep trying. And like you said, I was never the best on the team. I never won any All-Star awards, but I just kept going in that direction, and I was focused on that, and I'd made that promise. And it was filled with, you know, injuries, failures, and no universities wanted to give me a scholarship, so I paid my way to the smallest football playing school in Canada, Bishop's University. Same thing there, no awards. You know, I see other guys in the team getting all Canadian and all this attention, and me, nothing. But I just kept going. And next year, high school, next year, university, I finally get a tryout with the Detroit Lions by never giving up, get cut there, come home back to Ottawa, and on October 30th, 1995, I get a phone call to go down to Miami. And actually, on that day, I signed a contract with the Miami Dolphins, and Dan Marino was the one who walked in the room and told me the news. So, yeah, you know, so 30 incredible. Years to the day.
Yeah.
And it's just a story of resiliency. And I know, I mean, you've had a huge, successful NHL career, but I know it's come from sort of just that same sort of thing, right? Never giving up and just sort of showing up at the rink every day.
Well, that's it. Having a goal and you know, basically, you know, living your life with, you know, that on your shoulder. Decisions that you make, I at a young age was, you know, committed to do that, and you make a lot of sacrifices. Yeah. You know, it would have been, you know, easy to, oh, I want to, you know, stay home and go to the parties, hang out with my school friends, mm-hmm. and you know, you give up a lot of that to, you know, try and achieve your goal, your dream, and to go along with that, you know, it's hard to measure the heart, you know, the what you want to, how hard you want to work to put into that. And, you know, we talk about young kids and the skills and all that, and that's a huge part of it that you can't measure, you can't see. It's got to be within you. And, that was my goal and committed to do whatever I had to do to try and make that happen. And, mm-hmm. You know, one of the lucky ones, 'cause I think you do need some luck involved with that path, and, things fell into place, and I'm sure glad that, I did everything that, I had to achieve it. It was, now retired. Oh, you know, everything that I have to, you know, being able to achieve that goal.
Mm-hmm. So when you see your kids, like, as you obviously, excuse me, had struggle. You know, you had to, you didn't come from a father who played in the NHL, right? And so there's a certain amount of struggle. And I think of myself, wanting to play football. My father's from, like, Rhodesia, didn't know anything about football. You know, he was a cricket player, a rugby player, and that whole thing. And then now, like, your kids, you look at them, do they have enough struggle in their life to achieve things that they want to achieve? And I don't know if it's hockey. It could be anything, right? Like, it doesn't matter if it's hockey. I mean, it might be something else.
You know, to be honest, I'm not sure. I certainly, my mom and dad, I just lost my dad in 2012.
Oh,
you know, have a sister that I still have, but, you know, we went through, a lot of adversity as a family. When I was 10, my mom was paralyzed from a virus. And 2 years later, my dad became legally blind from diabetes. So at, you know, like you said, I was 10, my sister was 14, and it was all hands on deck for us. We were kind of helping, you know, run the house.
Wow.
Between, you know, cooking meals and doing laundry and just keeping things together at home.
Yeah.
So, you know, at you know, those young ages for me and my sister forced us to and grow up, you know, a little bit quicker than everyone else and mature. And I think that adversity, you know, just helps grow something in you that inside of you that determination to to go after something. You know, I think that was you know, a big part of it for me. So when you ask that, I'm not sure that, you know, my kids haven't you know, gone through that kind of stuff. But you know, my dad's message was work hard. You know, that's, I talked to people that he worked with, people that knew him, and when I talked to them, you know, without him being around, that, you know, that's what they all, my God, the guy, the hardest worker, didn't matter what the job was, he was a laborer, and he worked his ass off. And you know, so something that I tried to emulate, and really, that's, you know, the message I try and pass on to the kids. You know, that it's, you know, no one's gonna do it for you. If you want it, you gotta work at it.
Oh, that's amazing. That's, I mean, that's a huge struggle for sure in a young person's life, is, you know, everything to put on their shoulders. And what happened to your mom? She was paralyzed.
Yeah, just caught a virus, and basically happened overnight. So she was down, you know, in Edmonton, 4 hours away, in the hospital and rehabilitation center for about 6 months before she came back home. And you know, so for a long time, you know, we'd go see her on the weekends and stuff. It was a pretty crazy time.
Wow. And then your dad lost his vision. That is a big deal for a child. I mean, that's a huge thing to overcome, right? And like, and I'm sure you had that, you know, look in the mirror and said, all right, you know, if things are going to change or get better, or, you know, just be normal around here, it's up to us, right? You and your sister.
Yeah, we had to take it on. And, you know, I don't know, maybe it was, you know, trying to, you know, bring some excitement and happiness into the, you know, that's why I pushed myself to, you know, try and make the NHL. You know, I mean, when you're 10 years old, who knows what, you know, what, you know, I need a psychologist to tell me what I was thinking. You know, it's almost seems like a blur.
Yeah.
But, you know, like that's, as I said, all those factors certainly played into, you know, how you look at things and try and achieve things.
When did you figure out you're going to be a defenseman?
I pretty well played defense right from a young age. You know, just naturally, you know, stayed back and tried to defend and not allow goals against.
That's the actual job description.
You know, and then, you know, just, you know, once you're doing that, then, you know, you try out for the team and you say, oh, I'm a defenseman. Okay. And you try out for defense and you stay there. And, you know, I think there's, if you really look at it, it's probably get morphed into that too early.
Yeah.
Instead of, you know, trying everything and playing everything more and learning it all. But the ironic thing is, once I made the NHL, I actually played forward on and off for a few years. We had a lot of defensemen.
Oh, yeah.
Forwards got, a few guys got hurt and kind of moved me into this power forward position.
Oh, yeah.
And, never really played before until I got the NHL.
That is so unbelievable.
Kind of backwards.
I always find it funny that they list like a defenseman's goals and assists, you know, like who really cares? You know what I mean? Like, does that have anything to do? Like, if I mean, I looked at you on Wikipedia, I'm like, this year he really, you know, outdid himself with 8 goals. And I'm like, you know, does that matter at all? He scored 2 more than the previous year or something, right?
Yeah. No, they don't put poke checks and block shot. Well, I guess he's block shots a little more, but.
Yeah, block shots for sure. Yeah. That's hilarious. Yeah. So at, you said around 15, you made, like, when did it become your life? Like, you're leaving home?
So I didn't leave home till I was 17. I played 2 years of junior at home. Staying home and playing tier two still left the door open to go to university.
Okay.
Which was a real thought for me. I was drafted into the WHL.
Okay.
But held back a year.
On your own decision?
Yeah, kind of with the family and trying to figure out what was right, and made things a little bit easier being at home. My sister was at college mm-hmm. At that time, so being able to help out at home was a part of it. Leaving the door open to go to NCAA was a big part of it. And development-wise, I was still only 16. I was, you know, one of the better players on the team at that time. I was, you know, a ton of ice time and really developed a lot as a player just because I had a lot of opportunity. And I think that helped out my path, even just instead of going, making the next jump. And mm-hmm. who knows how much you're going to play if, you know, I always even tell young kids, you know, if you're going to be on the ice all the time at one level lower than being the next highest level and sit on the bench and not yeah. be put in opportunities, you're not really going to develop as much.
That's a great
just to be on the better team.
Yeah.
And then that was how that worked out for me. And so that at 15 playing junior hockey, you know, my hometown, like, it's like playing the NHL here. You know, everyone's talking about the Oil Barons.
Okay.
And, you know, you have your team jacket on and you're like a star,
yeah,
at,
yeah.
At, you know, at that age. And minor hockey kids are looking, they want to play for the Oil Barons when they grow up. And it was a pretty cool experience to yeah. be a part of that at a young age. But, you know, being on the ice with, you know, 20-year-olds and, you know, hard, good hockey and fighting and... Yeah. You know, that really elevated my career in a hurry. Yeah.
That must have been a huge trend. Did you say you were 15 when you went there?
Yeah.
And played against 20-year-old, like, you know, men?
Yeah.
That must have been a huge jump, right?
Like, yeah, it was. And there was a couple, well, we actually had probably 8 or 9 20-year-olds on our team at that point. And, so you know, they'd finished school. And, you know, I laugh, you know, looking back. But when, you know, when, at that time, like, I thought these guys were, man, these guys are old.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
know, like,
yeah,
the shaving and all these little things. Like, yeah. Holy smokes.
That guy has a car.
They're yeah, they're driving. My mom's driving me to the rink. And you know, so it did seem like...
go do your thing, sweetie.
Were, yeah, they were a lot older until I got to 20 and didn't feel as old as how I thought those guys were. But, yeah, it was a big jump.
It's a funny thing, like you said, looking back and thinking a 20-year-old's old, right?
Yeah,
like,
no kidding.
You got bus boys at Big Rig that are 20, I'm sure. What's this one here? This is this looks tartan pants.
Tartan pants,
strong. That's the Scotch ale.
That's the Scotch ale. Was rebranded this year to. It was in the LCBO as a fall seasonal, and okay. It's done really well for us.
Oh wow, it's a coffee looking almost.
That's dark.
I love coffee, liking, looking things. How's yours? Are you done your first one yet?
Almost. I'm talking too much. That's usually not the case.
That's a podcast. Yeah, I know. I was wondering. I thought you were really good at talking about beer, too, by the way. I can tell you do that quite a bit. Scotch A, I'm looking forward to that. So then you go to junior hockey. So from the Oil Barons, where did you go from there?
So I was drafted by Prince Albert and in the WHL. I went there when I was 17. And... moved away, lived with a family, billet family yeah. that took me in, and right away had a great experience, great group of guys,
yeah.
Good family. I still had grade 12 schooling to do. You know, met some people at school, had some friends, and really was a good experience for me. I know, you know, a lot of guys, and you know, they leave home and. It is a huge adjustment, but struggle with that adjustment a little bit. You know, personally for me, it went fairly smooth.
It's funny because, you know, people think, oh, that guy's a good player. He's got all the natural things, but so much of it is based on the environment you end up in. Like you say, lucky, like a good coach, a good environment where everyone's sort of supportive and moving you in that direction, right? I was very lucky to have amazing high school, university coach, and like the parents that just keep pushing me in that direction. And I only know that, realize now, looking back and seeing sort of other environments that people may have been in that just were negative, were sort of toxic, you know, didn't push the people in the right direction. And you see a lot of people who had the potential or could have done it, and they just don't have those same opportunities. It sounds like you've made a great choice in playing for the Oil Barons, which sounds fantastic, right? The hometown kid playing for the big squad, and then Prince Albert. That's in BC, right?
Yeah, Saskatchewan.
Oh, Saskatchewan.
Northern Saskatchewan.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So you are like a prairie boy forever.
one northern town to another.
it's more north, right? Is it?
It's a little bit south, but a couple hours north of Saskatoon. So kind of, both. Mm-hmm. Not a whole lot going on around.
Yeah. Were there like coaching mentors that you had in an early age that sort of helped you out with things?
I had great minor hockey experience with mm-hmm. coaches. A few coaches that, stayed with the team for a few years, great relationships with them. Into junior hockey, the same coaches while I was in Fort McMurray that really supported me, helped me out, wanted me to go to the next level. We talk about all these different circumstances, just like you were saying. You could go to the situation where, if you're fighting with the coach and not seeing eye to eye, and all of a sudden you're, not playing that often. It could easily go bad. Mm-hmm. And when I got to Prince Albert, they had just hired Chris Stewart, who was he was coaching in Olds when I was playing in Fort McMurray, so we were like rivals.
Okay.
And when I got there, so it was like this kind of funny bond, because we'd kind of battled against each other's teams.
Okay. Yeah.
And then got there and had this connection that we could talk about that and mm-hmm. had a bit of a relationship.
Yeah.
Immediately and. Again, just worked. It was a good fit for me.
Yeah, it's nice when you have sort of people know, like they respect what's gone on in the past, right? When you go from, that's what sports is great about, right? You can be enemies, and then 2 weeks later you're on the same team, and you're going together towards the common goal.
It's incredible.
Yeah,
I love sports for that. Mm-hmm. That there's been certainly guys traded. Both to and away, I played with guys and, they get traded and then you're battling them, the next week and trying to, shut them down and,
hard, right? Like,
100%. Yeah. And then, the game ends and, you see them in the hallway and, give them a handshake and a hug and talk. And it's awesome. And sports is, is so good for that. Banging heads for 60 minutes and trying to win and it's a hard game and you could run into the bar after and have a great talk about different guys that you've played. It's so easy to make connections with, especially after a long career of everybody's played with somebody, even if you don't know a guy, that's right. There's an easy connection with everyone.
Yeah.
Now sports is terrific for that.
What are some of the more notable ones you can remember playing against after they've left? Like Mike Fisher or
Danny Heatley was one. Once I played with him, got to know him. I'm a shutdown defenseman playing against a goal scorer.
Yeah.
I used to have these bets with my wife to try and, because I knew who I'd be playing against, and I'm going to try and, shut this guy down. And
I won't ask you what the winner gets in that bet.
No, thanks. So me and Heater used to talk about that, and he knew about it. And then we were facing off against each other, and we'd be laughing on the ice because he knew that I'd be like, the bets I got to shut you down tonight. So, we'd be laughing on the ice, but
that's hilarious.
Yeah.
That's great.
The game within the game.
Uh-huh. You always wonder when the guys are looking at each other, cause it usually ends in a laugh or a fist fight, right? And you're wondering, like, you could be saying anything, right? Or nothing.
Yeah.
It's funny to know that you're actually like, there's something behind laughter.
There's some great conversations out there. I've, even heard a few, clips they're catching now where, guys are, in a fight and then, you know, go to the penalty box and, you know, they're from the same hometown or like, hey, what are you doing this summer? You know, and they're talking, you know, and people that don't understand the sport are like, these guys are crazy.
That is funny. Yeah, people don't understand the sport, right? They think you're like enemies. They want to like scalp each other and cut the heads off. And
Just... Hey, good job, buddy. Good job. You really got me with that laugh there.
That's awesome. Yeah. So, okay. So we're at the Prince Albert. What's the team name there?
Raiders.
Raiders. Yeah. How long you were there for?
I was there for a year and a half. After my first year, I was drafted by Ottawa into the NHL.
First overall, right?
First overall. That's amazing. Yeah, fooled them all.
How does that feel? That's like you know, every year, what is it, 20 guys win the Stanley Cup? Every year, one guy gets picked first overall.
Yeah, it's I don't know if it's, it still hasn't sunken in, I don't think. I don't know what age I'll get to when I – just because it doesn't even seem like that's possible to myself. You know, like as I said – you know, growing up, there was better hockey players. Certainly as I got into, you know, playing junior hockey and world juniors, there were some really good players. Yeah. So, you know, to see myself, you know, being picked higher to them just didn't almost make sense.
Yeah.
But I rolled with it and it was awesome.
Yeah. $100 bills. Yeah. Wow, that's great. So you were at the draft?
Yeah. Went to the draft in St. Louis.
Okay.
My whole family was down there, as well as you know, a group of friends that you know, had come down, the local radio station, and
like a station from Ottawa, you mean,
from or? No, from Fort McMurray.
Oh, okay.
So you know, it was a big deal back home. To you know, there was lots of talk already that you know, going high in the draft.
Yeah.
After doing some interviews there at the draft. I was pretty certain that San Jose was going to take me second if Ottawa took someone else. And Ottawa ended up taking me. So, you know, I knew that I was going one or two based on everything that I was hearing and talking to San Jose. So it actually made the whole experience fun, really.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't have to... you know, sit there and be worried about, am I getting drafted?
Yeah.
It was, let's go and enjoy this experience and try and soak it all in. And I was fortunate that Ottawa picked me, and who would have thought that, you know, I'd still be here.
Yeah, 20-something years later. Yeah. What was the year? That was
96.
96.
Yeah.
I was drafted in 95 in the CFL, first round. But Ottawa picked a dead guy that year. So, I'm pretty sure they picked a guy who was dead. I'm pretty sure. Over me. Grew up here. I'm like, oh, they're like fourth overall. At least they'll go top four.
Yeah.
Ottawa picks, you know, some guy, and they're like, that guy's dead. He's been dead for 2 years. Great. And then the last pick of the first round, I'm sitting there. There's only four guys invited to the draft in the CFL in Saskatoon. In Regina. In Saskatoon. It was in Saskatoon. And, first four go, all right, thanks, guys. You know, and you're still sitting there. And then they pick, you know, a dead guy. And some guy's not here. And then, like, the last pick of the first round, I got down on my knees. I was like, thank you. It was a good feeling, too. But not first overall in the NHL. That's great. So after you get your... You're still laughing at the dead guy. Yeah, he had a great career. It was similar to mine. And so you get drafted. That's from Prince Albert. You got drafted. You were a player there. You got drafted by the... Did you go immediately to...
So I get drafted in the summertime to Ottawa. Went to training camp. And it was... It's funny because, you know, it really, you know, doesn't get brought up a whole lot. You know, it was over 20 years ago. I had played, I think, six exhibition games, and we had one more. It was, you know, having a good camp, you know, not getting scored against, fitting right in. And, you know, you get a taste of the NHL, you know, you're getting you know, $120 per diem a day. And you're like, this like
it's cash.
This league is unbelievable. And and thought that I could stick around, wanted to stick around. You know, they said, well, we haven't finished evaluating you. And then there was a moment where exhibition game, and I was a healthy scratch. I wasn't playing. So, my agents were, everyone was kind of pissed off, and we left camp really kind of trying to force their hand to try and get signed. And, you know, it was a big mess for, a couple weeks. And, you know, I've basically forgotten about it. It was not a fun time. Wanting to stick around, but, you know, ended up, you know, not getting signed and then going back to junior and playing another year in the Western Hockey League, which, mm-hmm. you know, turned out to be a great year, and came back to Ottawa and made the team and, you know, had a good long career. But mm-hmm. That was, you know, a sort of big hiccup there for mm-hmm. When I look back on it.
Yeah, I don't remember that, but that was
good.
I mean, yeah, I don't think many people remember that. Maybe Liam McGuire, because I knew that. Yeah,
no kidding. He knows more about me than I do.
That's funny. Look, he was on the podcast right there. Sign the table. Don't forget to sign the table.
Oh yeah, okay. Somebody stole my dream big though.
Yeah, well, you can do that. You can write over top of that. That's Leanne Lang.
Oh, she won't be happy. Actually, I was just with her down south, right? Just after she had done this, I think.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. With Tony Harris?
Yeah.
And, oh, cool. I didn't know that you were there, too. That's great. Oh, yeah. Your wives are friends.
Yep.
Yeah. Because I know you're not friends with Tony Harris.
Hope you're listening, Tony.
He's a funny guy.
Oh, man. He's awesome.
Isn't he the funniest guy?
Yeah, he's great.
So funny. Yeah. One time he got, I know, I get to get off track. One time,
Bishop's guy.
Bishop's, yeah. He was a Bishop's All-Canadian quarterback. Yeah. I believe he played in the OHL, too, as a goalie for Kingston.
Yeah, that's it.
And so this one time, there used to be a thing where university football players would go play in Europe after. It wasn't NFL Europe. It was just in Europe. They would head over there, and they retired, and they'd be gone for the second half of the semester. So we had a football banquet that year, and to honor the people who had were done playing football, Tony Harris gets up, and he gives this speech, and he's like, our boys have gone off to Germany, or whatever, you know? And he gave this speech like they'd all gone off to war, and everyone is just dying. He never cracks, and he's like, we're proud of them, some of them won't come back, we don't care. And it was just so well done. I'm like, that guy is so funny, man. He's next level funny, and an amazing artist, right?
Yeah,
like,
how no do you kidding. Paint
like
what sports guy is talented like that?
Yeah, with hands like that. Yeah. Like to break his fingers and see what happens.
Yeah.
Right? Like he can paint a picture better than I can take a picture.
Yeah, it's incredible.
It is crazy.
Yeah, he did he's done a few pictures for us, but the team commissioned him to do one for my 1,000th game, and it's
games.
It's incredible picture. Yeah, it's really, really cool.
Of all the things in any professional sports, to play 1,000 games in the NHL must be one of the greatest accomplishments. Like, could you, when you started playing in the NHL and you saw everything going on around you and the kind of game it is, did you imagine playing 1,000 games in the NHL?
No, definitely not. I met my wife, Erin, early on mm-hmm. In Ottawa. And, you know, she always remembers me telling her, that I hope to play 10 years. Like, that was a good long career.
Yeah.
Not even having expectations of getting to those levels. So to do that, especially for a guy that gets 3 to 4 goals a year,
but they're awesome goals.
a games played stat is pretty big. extremely, honored and humbled everything to, it was a big achievement to, play 1,000 games for sure.
Yeah, I know guys, football players have always said the same thing, 10 years. And to me, like, I played 5 and I'm still sore, man. Yeah. Like, you know, my head still rings and I don't know how guys do it. I guess, do you think you learned the sort of don't know if the right word is pace yourself for 10, you know what I mean? Like, cause you can't go out crazy all the time. Cause I'm sure you see guys who come in, they just like football. You got these guys who come out and they're bullets, they're bulls, they go hard and then they're done in, you know, 18 months, their career's over. And I was similar to that. I was all out. I was always taught to be the hammer, not the nail, just go hard. Yeah. And I would see guys around me sort of doing what they needed to be a good player. And then that, and I look back and having seen that, you know, my career ended 5 because of injuries, and then they played 14, you know what I mean? Because they had learned to play that way. Is that something that you made a conscious decision to?
I don't know if it was a decision of, you know, because you don't go on the ice thinking, all right, I gotta, you know, take it easy here. Mm-hmm. But there's no doubt that, you know, everyone always said, and I took pride in it, that I played my best hockey in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And I certainly, you know, brought it up a notch and was more physical, you know, more intense hockey. But, you know, in hockey, having an 82-game schedule, lots of back-to-back nights, I always said that, you know, if I played that way all the time, like I did in the playoffs, right, I wouldn't be able to get through it, you know. But, yeah, you know, I had one long, you know, playoff run right to the finals, a few, you know, conference finals. But, you know, every round of, you know, you're feeling it for a while. So, you know, to try and have those expectations to do that for 82 games and then bring it up another notch, I don't know if that would have been possible. I think, you know, my, you know, biggest thing that I took pride in was I played injured. You know, I played through a lot of, you know, stupid injuries that, you know, you're trying to explain to people, and it sounds like I, and sometimes, you know, played in the 50s when you just, you know, you weren't allowed to say no, you know, and you know, you do different things to just make sure you get on the ice, and I took pride in doing that.
Yeah.
And
what's the biggest injury you played with?
I had awful trouble with my feet, getting kind of like calluses. I don't even know what the hell to call them, but
calluses paints the picture.
but really big ones on my feet, and made
did
it.
Did you have bunions?
Yeah.
Do you have bunions?
Yeah. Made it tough to put my skates on.
Yeah. You know what bunions are, right? When you're like your big toe and then your kind of goes out at the bottom. You know what I mean?
Like okay. Yeah. So I get them on the side.
Yeah. That's what I got too,
the
man.
Side and the heel.
Yep.
And if they became inflamed, it was terrible. It was not fun putting my skates on. And that's not, you know, good when you're playing hockey that you don't want to put your skates on. But, you know, lots of games, you know, later on when they had shootout, you know, the game would end and I couldn't wait to untie my skate. So, you know, if they ever said, you know, you're up in a shootout, I'd be like, sorry, my skates are off. I can't go. Can't do this.
I never thought this would happen.
Everybody's gone?
Everybody's gone twice, yeah. I'll put my skates back. Can I do it in barefoot? It's the same chance of scoring.
Yeah, no kidding.
That's funny. I'll take a slap shot from here. That's good. Yeah. So, yeah, foot problems. That's good. What about head injuries?
Later on, I had a couple concussions, but nothing that you know, kept me out for extended period of time. And, you know, no, you know, post-concussion stuff, no, just no symptoms. Yeah, so
that's good.
You know. That I know of yet, anyway. So hopefully they stay away. But so far, so good.
Yeah. What's that? There's a picture of the Sensplex. Is it of you checking Darcy Tucker?
Yeah.
He's upside down.
Yeah.
I remember taking my kids there, and every day we'd stop and look at that. It's the most amazing picture.
It
is
a great picture.
What's the story behind that picture?
I think it might have been a playoff game, and he actually came. He was coming to hit me, and I don't even remember exactly because I was almost kind of passing by and I was able to get a piece of him.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he was jumping or off balance, whatever, but somehow he ended up upside down. It wasn't a hip check, but somehow he ended up upside down. And And somehow somebody took a picture at the perfect moment.
It's the perfect picture. It's the perfect. It's a picture every person wants, right? You know, maybe scoring an overtime goal or something. Yeah. But that picture is amazing. That's like that's what a football player wants, right? Yeah. Like that picture of the guy. Just I think his face is all kind of going into the ice too, isn't it? Yeah.
He's right close to it, anyways. Yeah.
And like, there's never been a guy that Ottawa fans have hated more, right? Than Darcy Tucker.
He might be at the top. Yeah.
Those were crazy years when
it was awesome.
Yeah, they were awesome is the right word, right?
Yeah, it was so much fun. You know, like we had, you know, no success really in the playoffs against them.
So frustrating.
So frustrating. And had some great teams, some great chances to, you know, really have a great cup run, I think. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they were our nemesis and they had our number. But, you know, once your career's over and you look back, that was fun hockey.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, as a fan too, like that's for me. Those are the years when I suppose that when my kids were starting to play the most and I paid the most attention. But yeah, it seemed like every year, like Toronto hasn't had a great year, and maybe this is our year. Yeah. And then now, you know, every year, like you said though, everyone changes their game in the playoffs,
yeah,
right?
That's
and
it.
They change their game too, right?
Yeah, and they did have always had a lot of veteran guys. That had been through a lot, been in the league a long time, that, you know, knew how to handle all that.
Right.
And paid off for them.
Yeah, as they say, the gritty player, right? Like the Darcy Tucker, for sure. What when you first got to the league, who were the people that you sort of looked to kind of, like, emulate?
I don't know if there was a player that I... you know, being a defenseman. Mm-hmm.
Were there any guys like that kind of helped you out? You're the young guy.
Yeah, there was lots of guys here in Ottawa. It was a great group. And
I just burped right into the microphone. That's from the tartan pants.
Tartan pants will do it.
It's delicious too. haven't found one I don't like yet.
Well, there you go. Yeah. Two for two. it was very similar to like you said, when I was 15 playing with 20-year-olds. Mm-hmm. When I came to the NHL. There was a lot of guys that were 30 years old.
Yeah.
And again, I was like, wow, these guys are really old.
Those old 30-year-olds.
But we had a really great group of guys. Lance Pitlick was here. Jason York, Sean Van Allen. I played with Igor Kravchuk. Really, the list goes on and on. Randy Cunningworth, first captain when I came in here.
Wow, that was a long time ago, man.
Yeah. And got to play with Wade Redden, who was he was a year ahead of me. And so when I was 14 growing up, he was 15 playing for Lloydminster in the Alberta Junior Hockey League. So he'd come to town and, you know, I'd go to watch Wade Redden.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the next year... I'm doing the same thing he's doing, and then he goes to Brandon, and I end up in Prince Albert, and I'm playing against them, and then we played World Juniors together, and then he gets traded to Ottawa, actually at the WHL All-Star Game when we're together, he gets traded to Ottawa, so we have this relationship, you know, we're all kind of buds, have the same history growing up, and got in there. I was actually my roommate. We lived together my first year, and you know, helped me out. He'd been through a year of the NHL already, show me the ropes, and it, you know, again, the circumstance, guys welcomed me in with open arms and just made it comfortable right from day one.
Mm-hmm. So World Juniors, that was you guys won the gold medal, right?
Yeah, I played 2 years. 95 and 96.
Where was that? Where was
the 90? First year was Boston.
Okay.
Second year was Geneva, Switzerland.
Okay.
First year, I was the only two of us were undrafted. So kind of the extra seventh defenseman that.
So you went to the World Juniors.
Had the pom poms and didn't play very much.
And you were undrafted. So
yeah.
Okay, and you were.
I was 17 then.
17.
So I was, that was my first year of the Western Hockey League, and then I was drafted that summer.
Okay.
So I was there in Boston where we won the gold medal, and then the following year, had a year of experience and you know, second year player and played quite a bit, and you know, that one was a little more impactful
yeah.
to me to be a difference maker mm-hmm. In that one to win the gold medal. But yeah. Both were great experiences.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the value of even just being there, right, and going through everything and it helps. Like, it's funny because in the World Juniors, you talk about someone's experience, and that's the guy who sat in the bench the year before, yeah, right? Yeah, it's not like someone who's been around 10 years, yeah. right? So, and you do realize the value of experience, right? Even if it's only 1 year of watching what happens.
Yeah, just being a part of it, seeing how everything happens, mm-hmm. You know, knowing some of the guys that were, you know, you watched the year before mm-hmm. and tendencies of how, you know, and how to react in situations, what you can and can't do. And
yeah, it's funny because in the NHL, you always hear around the trade deadline, they bring in a guy who's won a Stanley Cup, right? And you're like, well, that guy can't even, you know, contribute on the ice, but there's so much more, right, behind that. Like you say, it's a new game altogether. And just to know what time to go to bed, where to eat, you know, all those little things that lead to success that can be replicated or duplicated another time. And it's so invaluable that you bring in a guy.
Yeah, 100%. You know, just even, you know, some of those guys that have, you know, gone through playoff series, you know, in years past. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember Sean McEachran coming in, and he was involved. I think he was with Pittsburgh when they were down one of the early series. They were down 3-1 mm-hmm. and came back and won the series, and I think went on to win the Stanley Cup mm-hmm. That year. So just being able to tell the guys, yeah, this is possible here. Like, you know, we got to stay positive because it's, you know, you just got to win this game and then you know, don't worry about the other ones. Just come and win this game. And, you know, it's easy for people just to say that. Yeah. But when you have a guy that's lived it and breathed it, then, you know, that's more impactful for sure.
Yeah. I had a football coach in university, Ian Breck, and he had a story for every situation we found ourselves in. And as young men, it always seemed to work. You know, we'd go in at halftime down by 20, and he would come in and go, listen, I got to tell you. And he would tell you a story of a team that came back from a 30-point deficit. And, you know, then you believed and you realized it could happen. And the value of what you think in your head is just so important, right? Like, all these guys, they're all great athletes, and, you know, they're great hockey players, and they've been through it all. And then, like, what do you think? To play as long as you did, there has to be something going on in your head that's leading, you know, telling you the right things, right? Like, is there a conscious, like, sort of, when Leanne Lang was here, she talked about visualization and how, and I also said, you know, that's when I started at night going over my plays in my head every single night. That's the way it started unfolding and success started happening more readily for me. Is that something that was part of your game?
I would say a little bit. I think a part of it as well was being able to leave the game at the rink.
Mm-hmm.
You know, playing in the NHL in Canada, you know, if you listen to the radio every day or read the newspapers every day, you know, sometimes you'd really be questioning yourself, like, you know, I guess I'm not that good.
All of
a guy on the radio said I was terrible. Anyways, you know, and there's, you know, trade rumors and just everything that, you know, right from, you know, early on, I come and, you know, play the game and, you know, try be focused, do the right things to prepare physically and just, you know, block everything out when you're at the rink. And then when you leave the rink, you know, just leave hockey there and live your life and have fun and, you know, not to stress out about, you know, maybe I should have done this on this play or that on that play. And then, you know, not sleeping at night because you're, you know, screwed up something or you should have done something different. And I think having a family at a young age made a huge difference or was a huge part of that as well.
Yeah.
That, you know, we come home and then it was, you know, we'd deal with, you know, the kids and family life. And they didn't even know. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sure, you know, young age, they didn't even know I played hockey, let alone
that's right.
whether I had a good game or a bad game. They were just happy that dad was home. And, you know, that really even made it easier to do that.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love to hear that. Yeah. I mean, that is the most important job, right? Like, just to be a good father and be there, right?
Yeah.
And like you're what, 40? How old are you?
I'll be 40 in the spring.
You'll be 40?
40 in March,
You're not even 40?
No.
and you're retired, yeah, and you're like, you know, it's amazing, right? Like, yeah. the game of hockey has been so good to you, you know? Like,
yeah, it really has been. my son had, you take your kid to the grade nines, to take your kid to work day. And so he had a good laugh with his teacher. He's like, what are we going to do, sleep in till 2:45?
And then go to a brewery? Do some samplings? That's good. Sleep in to 2:45. Oh, that's great. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I almost couldn't stop laughing. You're like, the guy in the radio told me I'm not very good. Right? Like, you know, it's such a reality, though. Like, and guys get caught up in that, yeah. Man. Like, oh, the newspaper says I'm terrible.
Yeah.
Right? That's like, you know, I won't say any names, but one guy, you know? And I remember the guy. You know what I mean? Like, I can remember. Anyways, I won't get into that point, that part of professional sports. But yeah, to be able to, like, be a father and be around all the time now, you know. I can't believe you're only 40 yet, or not 40 yet. You see, not 40 yet.
Yeah.
30, oh, yeah. Next year. Wow.
So I look incredible. A lot older, huh?
You know what's funny about the way you look is around town for years, people have thought I was Chris Phillips.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, all over the place. Like, that's Chris Phillips. And I'm like, but he looks bigger. No, I didn't get that part. Yeah. But I would say, you know, every couple of weeks I hear kids going, I think that's Chris Phillips. And then they see the car I get into and go, that can't be Chris Phillips. He's no. So, okay. So we've entered the NHL. You've gone and back to junior for a year. You've come back to the Sens. And you start day one. You're on the team the second time you come back, right?
Yep.
The second time you come back. So everything's... And when you left the first time, was that your decision or an agent's decision?
Yeah,
or?
more the agents saying, yeah. You know, we should take off and put some pressure on them. And,
yeah.
You know, looked at playing in the AHL.
Yeah.
If that was an option. And, you know, none of it worked out. And, you know, wish it never happened, that part. But would have just... You know, sucked it up and went back and had a great year in junior.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know, that's how year one started out. And I just have before you get ahead. That year, I was traded to Lethbridge,
mm-hmm.
So I played a year and a half. So I went back to junior, started with Prince Albert,
yeah.
And then got traded to Lethbridge at the deadline,
mm-hmm.
And ended up coming play here in Hull in the Memorial Cup.
Oh, nice.
In 97.
Yeah.
The year before I...
Did you win them?
We lost in the final.
To Hull?
To Hull,
yeah. Oh, I remember that. And they were the team who... Like the host team, right? So they just got the buy-in.
Yeah, they had a pretty good team anyways. I think they might have won the league, but they were the host team and won it all.
Yeah, I remember that. That's... Yeah, I mean, it's always a big deal when the local team wins, for sure. I remember they used the 67s one in Hull. So we're going to enter the third beer here. I don't know if you're at your second beer. Oh,
I got some in there, but my glass is empty.
Glass is empty. Good. So our third one here is, this is the one I was wondering about. Double chocolate milk stout.
Midnight Kiss My Cow.
That's what drew me to it, was the picture of the cow on it. Yeah. And what's the story here? It's got a cow. Is it ever dark? This is like...
where you get the milk from, the cow.
No, milk comes right straight from the cow?
Yeah.
You live on a farm? Is that... Do you...
No. No. it was an oil town.
No, I mean here.
Oh, here. No.
But
no.
Do you... There's
We have a farm in the Manitic.
Okay.
But no house there, just land and an outdoor rink.
Is that right? So do you... An outdoor rink? Do you drive... No. You don't take care of the rink.
I haven't. This is. I'm hopefully this year I get out there a little bit more and try and get it in better condition.
Okay.
I have a buddy that lives close that takes care of it and tries to get it ready. The last couple of years has not been great weather outdoor rinks, but you know, for all the hours that go into an outdoor rink, it seems like 1 hour on it makes it all worth it.
It's so just worth it.
So much fun.
Yeah, we've had a rink. Oh, I had a rink every year. I lived here till last year, but I built a rink for 12 years for my kids, and it was, like you say, you just get out there and you're skating on your, for here it's a front lawn or back lawn, you know what I mean? It's just such a great feeling. The snow's falling, and
yeah,
wow, it's amazing feeling. And you're right, it's a lot of work, but I don't remember the work.
Yeah.
I can remember standing out at night and just looking back and with pride and sprinkling, you know, putting water on it. And those are the memories I have. I don't have the, like, trying to build the boards when it's cold and all that memories. It's a, and obviously on the rink time. It's a great thing. And you always had one, right, growing up?
Yeah, growing up, early on anyways, we had like a 12 by 12 rink on our deck on the patio, whatever it was, mm-hmm. there. And I don't know how he did it, but the base of it was newspaper. So you could actually, I couldn't read at the time, but you could see the newspaper underneath the ice. So that was a sign of how good the ice was. But
wow. I have no idea why you would have newspaper down.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. But it worked.
Yeah, for sure. It worked. So, like, memorable things that stood out in your career. I know we're on our third beer here. So, like, obviously, 07, right? Stanley Cup, that was...
07 Stanley Cup run was amazing. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I couldn't imagine the feeling, the city, if we were to win the Cup that year. But, you know, looking back and how hard it was just to get there and what you go through, was a highlight. Even the city up to that point, the Red Mile that year, or the Sens Mile, sorry, people waiting at the airport.
Yeah.
It was just a lot of fun, something that was just, you know, it would have been cool to be able to have the time to sit back and watch it more and appreciate it. But, being involved in it was an incredible feeling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I remember when I was went to the NFL Combine, and I to be perfectly honest, I don't remember who won the Super Bowl that year, but I know who lost.
Yeah.
It was the San Diego Chargers. And the reason I remember that is because I remember sitting at the San Diego Chargers table. You'd walk around, you'd get interviewed by them. And everybody, the whole time I was there, would walk by this table and congratulate every guy at the table, like, just for making it to the Super Bowl, right? Yeah. And I was like, oh, wow. It's such an accomplishment just to be in that big game and to be in the last game of the season, you know what I mean? Winning, it's awesome for sure. You'll have a ring, whatever, the whole bit. But this, the memory of having a team who made it that whole way is a fantastic, amazing accomplishment, right?
And, yeah, it really was. And it's hard to accept that at the time, but looking back, it really was and a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, I scored overtime goal in 03 conference finals, game 6, overtime to force a game 7, and that was probably a personal highlight of my career.
Goosebumps.
To be able to do that. I mean, when you grow up, you talk about visualizing, you dream of scoring, you know, the game 7 overtime, and how am I going to celebrate? You know, am I going to jump on the glass? Am I going to, what would I do? And you think about all that, and, that's what, would give me goosebumps thinking about that. So to score that goal to move on.
So we're in overtime, and it was game 7, you said?
Game 6.
That
was game 6 in New Jersey.
You're up by a game.
We were down 4-2.
4-2. Okay.
Or sorry, 3-2.
Yeah.
That was game 6, and we won in overtime to force a game 7 home.
Yeah, I remember that. You're coming down the left wing. Is that true?
It was down the right-hand side. So the camera was from the... I'd be on the left, but
yeah, you were on the left.
I was coming down the right,
okay,
following up the play, and Vaclav Harada was standing in front of the net, and I just remember coming in, and he was like swiping at the puck, and how, he didn't hit it or why it was laying there. I'm still not sure, but I just kept going, and the puck was sitting there, and swiped it past Marty Brodeur, and
on to
game 7, yeah.
Nice, that's amazing. I remember that. I think I was watching that at a fire station, and the feeling, the whole town, right? You feel the whole... It was amazing. Going to a playoff game in Ottawa, I think it might be the greatest sort of place I've been. You know what I mean? The feeling in the air is so electric and unbelievable. It's just such a, it's jam-packed full of people, and it's just an amazing, it's just an indoor environment, Like, I've been to football games where there's been 150,000 people all excited, but just the fact that they're in one sort of enclosed capsule, it's just such an amazing feeling.
Yeah. and playoff weather. You know, it's getting nice out. People are outside, and everybody's, you know, just brings everybody together. Yeah. There is no enemies. Everybody's just friends out there and having a good time, and it just, you know, comes into the rink, and you know, we can feel that excitement as players.
Of course. Of course you do. You feel it. It's in the air. It's there. It's something that's almost palpable. You can almost touch it. It fuels you, right? Like and like you say, it's a different sort of animal. You have a different gear for the playoffs.
100%.
Wow, that's great. What are you part of the organization at all now? Do you do anything for the Sens?
Yeah. I'm work on the community business development.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, excited to be still a part of it. You know, it gives me a badge that I can get into the rink and still go down to the dressing room and see the guys and have a coffee once in a while. Still a few guys there that I played with. And, you know, just to be a part of the organization still, and to, you know, be involved with some community stuff. And, you know, obviously a huge part of my life playing for that team. So, you know, to still be involved and a part of it, and mm-hmm. people still recognize me as being a part of it, you know, feels good as well.
Yeah, for sure. You're facing the Sens, I imagine, as long as you're alive, right? Or even after that, you know, Frank Finnegan's still around. he is, right? I mean, he's not around. The bar.
The banners,
it's still there. Yeah. For sure. And the Big Rig, what's going on with that?
It's going well. Restaurants, are both going well. So if we have any customers listening, thank you for your
we go there for breakfast all the time, man.
Oh, yeah, right, just down the street.
Yeah, yeah, 5 minutes from here. I love it.
And the beer side's going well. We have distribution in you know, most of Ontario,
mm-hmm.
With, you know, at least one brand, and it's been a fun project to be a part of.
So you can get it in the LCBO.
LCBO, beer store, grocery store.
Oh, beer store too. Okay.
Yeah.
And you can get it at Big Rig.
Yeah.
Like they sell it in the fridge
there. On Iris Street.
Oh, the Iris Street.
Yeah. Unfortunately,
okay.
We can't legally have one at
there's
Gloucester.
LCBO in the same parking lot. That's where I bought these. Delicious.
Iris Street and the brewery both have a retail store.
How many different, like you got three different kinds here?
Yeah, we got three here. We have a Salute. 1179. Mm-hmm. That happens to be how many games I played.
No, that's
so
cool.
No coincidence there.
1179.
It's a 4% Pilsner. We have a Canadian Amber. We have the Hefeweizen, Alpha Bomb. Those are sort of the main ones. And then we have some, you know, seasonals that we'll throw out, the Pumpkin Porter, that we can.
And that's incredible. There's so many different kinds.
Pretty good lineup. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. That must be a huge brewery. Where's the brewery in Kanata?
Schneider Road, 103 Schneider Road.
Is that in Kanata?
Yeah.
So,
yeah. End of Carling Avenue towards March Road.
Okay. So out by
the Lone Star.
Yeah.
Across the street from there.
Okay, I think I know where that is. That's okay. That's close to like where you play hockey, right? I mean. Similar. It's similar. The other side of the Queensway, though, right? I'm just trying to picture where that would be. I'd like to go. I love breweries.
Yeah, basically, if you just stayed on Carling, mm-hmm. it's at the end of Carling.
Okay.
Turn on to Schneider.
March Road. Yeah, okay. Yeah, it's a high-tech area.
Yeah.
Kinda, or used to be, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah, that's awesome. I find breweries so beautiful. I don't know if it's from my childhood watching Strange Brew, but, like, you know, just such a the big... Is it like that? Is it all the...
It is. And... Yeah. The tasting room has two big windows.
Yeah.
One of them looks right onto the canning line,
okay.
Which is cool to see how that happens.
Yeah.
And then the other one is right at our brew house where they're, you know, they're making it right there. And then you can see we have 24 fermenters in behind that. So mm-hmm. it's, you know, a beautiful picture of stainless steel.
Well, that's the beautiful part of it. I think that I love. And then the beer itself.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome, man. I really appreciate you doing this. Been an hour and 15 minutes. Thanks a lot.
Right. Finish our beers. Thank you very much.
Yeah, this is great. Welcome back. Amazing, amazing podcast with Chris Phillips. Thanks a lot for being here. And, you know, wow, guys had an amazing, amazing impact on this community. Just, you know, in hockey and charity and done so much. And and you know, overcome so much at a young early age to be you know, forced into that sort of a parental role at a young age when his parents aren't feeling well, aren't healthy, and just to succeed and to do so much and to be consistent and to stay so long in one play. And I mean, 1,000 games in the NHL is an incredible accomplishment. And it comes from, you know, thinking about the right things and doing the right things on a daily basis and pointing yourself in that direction and just keep going and to be resilient and to head in that positive direction. And now, you know, retired at 38, 39, 40 years old and to spend the time with his kids, it's a dream come true. And you know, he's got his own kids in hockey, which says a lot for the sport, says a lot for team sports and what it does for our kids and how positive an influence it has on growing a person who can contribute in society and in our community. And yeah, thanks to Chris, and the beer was fantastic. The Big Rig beer is delicious. My favorite, well, you know what? I had some gold lagered ale. I had some tartan pants scotch ale. And perhaps I've had a little too much, and I'll have a nap after this. But finishing off with the Big Rig Cow Double Chocolate Milk Stout, a delicious dessert beer. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Mark Hatfield's Friday Night this Friday, December 8th, and next December 22nd. So make a plan to be there. Look forward to seeing you. Festive Christmas, whatever you're celebrating. We'll have a good time. Until then, stay cool.